Southwest Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Police in the U.S. city of Charlotte, North Carolina remain on alert following a second night of violent protests after another fatal police shooting of an African-American man. The city is under a state of emergency. The demonstrations, which began peacefully, turned violent. This participant in the earlier demonstration says some people came to the march only to make trouble.
They started throwing gas. They started throwing everything. It was these loud things with a lot of, I don't know what it was, but they were just really rude. They had no compassion. They were even rude during our prayer. They were just rude for no reason.
Police fired tear gas and rubber bullets to try to disperse the crowd. The Charlotte government said one person shot Wednesday night by another civilian. Well, not police. The city government also retracted a statement that the person had died. The protests stem from a black Charlotte police officer fatally shooting 43-year-old Keith Lamont Scott Tuesday while he and other police were serving an arrest warrant at an apartment building for another person. Police say Scott had a gun when he got out of his car and ignored police commands to put the gun down. His killing comes just days after another black man was shot and killed by police in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton said Wednesday that the killings are unbearable and need to become intolerable. Republican Donald Trump tweeted, "The situations in Tulsa and Charlotte are tragic." A U.S. military official says Islamic State is suspected of firing a rocket or an artillery shell that landed on a military base in northern Iraq and may have contained a mustard agent. Authorities say tests will be done on an ordnance to determine if a chemical agent was used. An official said no one was hurt in Tuesday's attack at Qaira base, but several U.S. troops were on the base at the time. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry suggested to a high-level meeting at the U.N. Security Council that a sort of no-fly zone has to be in place in Syria. It's the latest recommendations toward helping humanitarian aid get to the people of Syria in dire need of assistance. Kerry did not single out Russian or Syrian planes, which are suspected of having a role in the attacks on the humanitarian convoy this week, which killed more than a dozen people.
On Monday, 20 aid workers were killed in an outrageous, sustained, two-hour attack directed at a fully authorized humanitarian mission near Aleppo. Fully authorized. All of the permits had been given. Everybody was on notice. Now, this attack has dealt a very heavy blow to our efforts to bring peace to Syria, and it raises a profound doubt about whether Russia and the Assad regime can or will live up to the obligations that they agreed to in Geneva.
As for his proposal on flight restrictions, Kerry said it will apply to all aircraft in specified areas of Syria, including planes flown by the United States and its coalition partners. The FBI is asking for the public's help in locating two men who allegedly found a piece of luggage on a New York sidewalk that contained an explosive device that may be tied to the suspect in Saturday's bombings in New York and New Jersey. The suspect, Ahmad Khan Rahami, faces multiple federal charges, including use of a weapon of mass destruction. Authorities arrested Rahami on Monday after an exchange of gunfire with police that left him and two officers wounded. Authorities on the U.S. island territory of Puerto Rico expect to have power Thursday restored to a large swath of the island. Schools and businesses were forced to close there on Wednesday after a fire at a power plant left just over 1 million people in the dark. The governor of the island said the fire destroyed a system that provides power to about 30% of the island and caused 15 additional fires across Puerto Rico as generators began to malfunction. Fortunately, no one was hurt. U.S. economic officials held the key interest rate steady at a near-record low level on Wednesday, but said the case for raising rates has strengthened. Many experts interpret that as a signal the U.S. Federal Reserve may boost interest rates in December. Central bankers use low interest rates like an accelerated pedal to boost economic growth and higher interest rates like a brake to keep the economy from crashing into high inflation. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington. Please join us for more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe has again called for an end to targeted Western sanctions against his government.
My country, Zimbabwe, is the innocent victim of their spiteful sanctions imposed by the United States and other Western powers for some 16 years now.
Mr. Mugabe spoke Wednesday at the ongoing UN General Assembly in New York. South Sudanese mark International Day of Peace with a call to end the country's conflict. What's behind a riot earlier this week at Senegal's largest prison facility? And Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama touts his country's dropped democratic credentials.
We're variously called the model of democracy in Africa or the beacon of democracy. Successive elections with power occasionally swinging between opposing political parties has established Ghana's democratic credentials in the world.
President Mahama spoke Wednesday at the ongoing UN General Assembly in New York. We'll take a sneak peek at the new National Museum of African American History and Culture, which opens later this week in Washington, D.C. And Ugandan Paralympics return home after winning the country's first medal at the Paralympic Games in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe has again called for an end to targeted Western sanctions against his government. Speaking Wednesday at the ongoing UN General Assembly in New York, Mr. Mugabe said achieving the goals of the UN Agenda 2030 for sustainable development has been made almost impossible for Zimbabwe because of what he calls the burden of punitive and heinous sanctions imposed on his country.
My country, Zimbabwe, is the innocent victim of their spiteful sanctions imposed by the United States and other Western powers for some 16 years now. As a country, we are being collectively punished for exercising the one primordial principle enshrined in the United Nations Charter, that of sovereign independence. We are being punished for doing what all other nations have done and still do, that is, possess, own their natural resources and listen to the basic interests of their people. Those who have imposed these sanctions would rather have us pander to their interests at the expense of the basic needs of the majority of our people. As long as these economic and financial sanctions remain in place, Zimbabwe's capacity to fully and effectively implement Agenda 2030 will be deeply curtailed.
President Mugabe joined the chorus of African leaders who have called for a reform of the UN Security Council to reflect what he calls the realities of the 21st century.
Mr. President, for over 20 years, many of us have come to this rostrum pleading and demanding the reform of the Security Council. Today, we are no closer to achieving that goal than we were 20 years ago. This is so in spite of the universal acknowledgement of the injustice, unfairness, and inappropriateness of the current composition of the Security Council. We now have an opportunity in the ongoing negotiations, in the intergovernmental negotiations, to redress this unjustifiable and unjust situation in the interests of a strong and more united organization capable of delivering on its mandate.
Mr. Mugabe called on the UN to redouble its efforts in addressing the plight of those, he said, are still living under colonialism, including the people of Palestine and Western Sahara. Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama says a reordering of the world economy will create boundless opportunities that would keep young African migrants from risking their lives across dangerous waters to Europe. Speaking Wednesday at the ongoing UN General Assembly in New York, President Mahama said one economic reform could be the removal of subsidies for Western farmers, which will create an even playing field for African farmers to compete.
Mr. President, some of the young Africans who hazard the desert and the Mediterranean Sea to cross to Europe from my country are young poultry farmers or other entrepreneurs who sell their shops and undertake the journey because they can no longer compete with the tons of frozen chicken dumped on African markets annually or the adverse business environment they have to face. Africa does not need your sympathy or overseas development assistance. Africa needs a fair chance to trade with the rest of the world and amongst ourselves. The progress towards the creation of a continental free trade area is commendable and must be fast-tracked, raising intra-African trade alone from the paltry average of 15% will create better business opportunities for African youth. We can achieve a lot in collaboration with the rest of the world, and yet we must realize that a lot also rests within our own capacity to achieve as Africans. Recently, I took the decision as president to allow citizens of other African countries traveling to Ghana to obtain visas on arrival. This would stimulate trade and investment if it were replicated across the whole of the continent.
President Mahama touted what he called the many success stories of Africa, including having the fastest growing population and middle class. He said Ghana's democracy is one of the success stories of Africa.
We're variously called the model of democracy in Africa or the beacon of democracy. We've not looked back since the adoption of our 1992 constitution. Successive elections with power occasionally swinging between opposing political parties has established Ghana's democratic credentials in the world. A strict two-term limit for the president means that every 8 years it is guaranteed that there will be a new person in charge. Ghana has a fiercely independent media with hundreds of newspapers and radio stations. And I always say jokingly to my colleagues that in Ghana, I have 27 million presidents, all of whom know my job better than I. And every morning, on the political talk shows across the country, my fellow citizens can be heard coaching me on how to do my job and what my responsibilities are as president.
The Ghanaian leader says Africa needs strengthened institutions, including governance reform. He criticized what he called the desire of some African leaders to remain in power indefinitely.
Democracy is not a one-size-fits-all system. Different countries are at different stages of the democratic journey. Democracy evolves and cannot be forced on a people. It doesn't help for biggest powers to go proselytizing democracy across the continent. It can have its negative consequences, as we're experiencing in parts of North Africa and the Middle East. But still, a properly functioned peer system can avoid some of the meltdowns we're experiencing in some African countries due to the desire to remain in office interminably.
President Mahama thanked ongoing UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon for his leadership in mobilizing the international community to stop the Ebola epidemic that killed thousands in West Africa.
2 years ago, I stood on this stage, and in my capacity as the chair of the Economic Community of West African States, I called for urgent action to halt the spread of the Ebola virus disease, which was ravaging three of our West African neighbors and threatening to spread across the whole of the sub-region. Today, I stand here to salute Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and the United Nations for the prompt response in setting up UNMEER, which was based in Ghana. UNMEER will probably go down in the history of the UN as one of the most successful and effective missions ever deployed by this organization. I salute also the international community for the effective response in the form of logistics, personnel, medication, and other material which helped to snuff out the disease in a relatively short time. But my particular commendation goes to the brave volunteers, including 41 of my own countrymen, who risked their lives by going into the infection zone to assist fight the disease.
That was Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama speaking Wednesday at the ongoing UN General Assembly in New York City. Prison authorities and local press in Senegal say one prisoner has died and dozens wounded, including 14 guards, when a group of prisoners rioted Tuesday night at the country's largest prison facility in the capital, Dakar. Prisoners have complained about overcrowded conditions at the prison, as well as lengthy pre-trial detentions. Mala Tala, a Senegalese activist and rapper who goes by the name Fou Malade, spoke to Ricky Stryak about prison conditions and what his social rights group, Yana Mari, is doing to improve the situation.
What happened in the prison of Robert in Dakar is a revolt of prisoners, because they want to go to trial. They have been waiting since a long time, some like 5 years without going to trial. That's why they made first a hunger strike, and after they made a revolution. All Senegalese prisons are full, and their living conditions are very painful. That's why prisoners are still grumbling again, these conditions.
They also complained, the prisoners who staged the mutiny, that the white-collar prisoners are treated better than they are. They complained about the conditions in the prison. You yourself have been in prison in Dakar.
All the prisons are full, and the food is not good. And even if prisoners are sick, they don't have medicines, they don't have drugs. That's why now, all prisons in Senegal, all prisoners get together for this strike because they want to end it right now.
What is next? What's the situation like right now? Do the authorities have it under control?
Yes. Now the situation is when they were making a revolution, and many of them are now in the hospital. They are in a very hard situation.
When we look to the future, what is being done to reform prisons in Senegal, or is anything being done?
The government has failed in any kind of field because they cannot solve the problem. And they promised to build a prison. They didn't do it. They promised to reduce the long detentions, and nothing is done. And that's why now what's going to happen could be more dangerous by these coming days.
What are people like yourself, what are activists doing to try and stop this? And not just the overcrowding, obviously, but the real problem of pre-trial detention for sometimes years for people.
Now, next Wednesday, we'll organize a mobilization at Obelisk Square with the parents of the prisoners and all Senegalese to denounce this situation and to ask to the president to find solutions now, to find solutions now for prison. Yes.
That was Mala Tala, a Senegalese activist and rapper and a spokesperson for a social rights group, Yana Mari. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has once again called on South Sudan's leaders to end the violence across the country. A top UN official in Juba read the Secretary General's message on Wednesday to mark this year's International Day of Peace. South Sudan Vice President James Wani Iga also said his country deserves peace. Tito Justin of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
We need unity and peace.
Students from Juba Girls Secondary School sang a peace song at Nyokon Cultural Center to commemorate the International Day of Peace under the theme, Together We Can Heal the Nation. It's the third time that South Sudanese are marking the Day of Peace while violence continues in parts of the country. The UN Secretary General's Deputy Special Representative in South Sudan, Mustafa Somare, read Ban's message calling on the warring parties to cease fire.
The United Nations calls on warring parties to lay down their arms and and observe the 24-hour global ceasefire.
In his statement, Ban said the peace agreement signed by President Salva Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar more than a year ago provided a roadmap to end the country's conflict, but the two sides have continued to violate the agreement. The UN chief made a direct plea to South Sudan's leaders to restore peace.
Millions of people continue to suffer the impact of years of war. Hundreds and thousands are displaced from their home and many are still affected by violence. It is therefore crucial that these countries' leaders renew their commitment to the implementation of the peace agreement.
Ban called on the leaders of the transitional government of national unity to put aside personal differences and work together. Speaking at the same event, Vice President James Wanyika agreed that the South Sudanese people have suffered for far too long and the conflict must come to an end. Speaking in Arabic, Wani says, everybody in the world wants peace.
I insan fi dunya dar salam. Lekin Africa.
Now in Africa, especially South Sudan, when peace comes like this, let us all stand for it. If you are at home, tell your husband or friend who wants to go and fight that, let him or her stop that.
The General Assembly has declared today as a day devoted to strengthening the ideals of peace, both within and among all nations and peoples. Some young residents of Juba expressed their thoughts about what this International Day of Peace means to them.
My name is Telia Zakaria. So many of majority have suffered, they have died without no reason. So because of that, we need peace so that we can have a good life, or we can have a development in our country, or we can have a good education in our country.
My name is Irene Lasu, and as a South Sudanese, I love peace very much. And comparing our context here, all I have to say to our leaders, to my fellow citizens, is that all I wish is to see that, I mean, the power of love of South Sudanese overcomes the love for power.
My name is Emmanuel Table. And my message to all the South Sudanese in these days, we need to live peacefully. Let's forget the past. We need to move on with peace and live like brothers and sisters. What has happened in the past, let's consider it gone. We need peace.
For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
The National Museum of African American History and Culture opens list this week in Washington. What started as legislation under then-President George W. Bush will soon be the latest addition to the Smithsonian's complex of museums on the National Mall. VOA got a preview of the massive museum. Arash Arabasadi has this report.
What we want is a museum that uses the past to help you understand the world you're living in.
That is the goal of the new Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Culture.
This is your story, regardless of who you are. That this is the story that tells you about your own family's struggle of freedom or citizenship.
It reshuffles the deck of American history. It's revolutionary.
The story starts with the global slave trade that forcibly brought Africans on a long, grueling journey to America.
We built the country, and we were enslaved for 246 years, which means that we were enslaved longer than we have been free.
Highlighted is this early 1800s slave shack.
It would have been pretty unbearable living within this cabin. If you've ever been down to the South Carolina Lowcountry, you'll know that it's very heavy with mosquitoes and bugs. It's very hot. When we collected the cabin, snakes came out of the cabin.
There are reminders of the Jim Crow laws in southern U.S. states that effectively enforced racial segregation by promoting the notion of separate but equal, which was anything but equal if you were black.
If you were white, you bought your ticket, you walked into this rail car and you sat in the white section. The white section was a lot nicer than the black section.
Exhibits weave the story through the civil rights era of the 1960s. And there are entire sections dedicated to entertainment and to sports, where participants of all races, when they were finally allowed to compete, were equal.
Whenever the playing field is even, and the rules are public, the goals are clear, referees are fat, and the score is transparent, we can make it.
But the struggle for civil rights is not limited to just African Americans.
African Americans paved the way through their strategies, right, to assist other groups
seeking equality.
The finishing touches are almost done. Doors open September 24th, led fittingly by America's first black president. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Last week, Uganda's own David Emong won the silver medal at the 1500-meter race at Rio's Summer Paralympics Games. Now that Emong has returned to Uganda, many are wondering how his win might impact sports and disability advocacy. Lisbeth Pollard has more from Kampala.
Ugandan sports fans went wild when, with only 37 seconds left in a four-minute race, runner David Emong blasted into second place, earning him a silver medal. The only athlete representing Uganda in Rio's 2016 Summer Paralympics, his win inspired proud posts on social media from President Yoweri Museveni and sports associations across the country. It's an especially poignant win for Emong, coming from a country where stigmatization of people with disabilities is rampant. Returning from Rio, he was greeted by his family, the Ugandan Paralympic Committee, Sports Council, and numerous disabled athletes. Covered in garlands upon his arrival, Emong says the reaction he has received from Ugandan sports officials is wonderful.
I work very hard to pave a way forward now for other upcoming athlete that is now behind me, and I thank those who have been prayed for me. I thank also the National Council of Sport for supporting me and other members that have been giving me support. But my dream now to bring now the gold medal for my country.
Emong started running in primary school after his arm was permanently injured and largely immobilized in a schoolyard accident. He says that although he was sometimes mocked, he never gave up on life. Rather, he kept going, competing, and often winning against able-bodied athletes. He says he hopes his win inspires more kids with disabilities to join athletics.
I'm the model of the disability. I really expect more people to come in through the organization to inject some money so that the people, my fellow athletes, go and qualify and we go and bring more medal.
Uganda Paralympic team member Innocent Tumwesiji says he has high hopes funding will increase in the wake of Emong's win.
I hope this has started our chapter for Uganda disability sports, because this is what we've been waiting to see. Because remember, we had also the General Secretary of the National Council of Sports, he was with us full time. Then we sat down and said, let's go and support, because he said, in his words, he's going to support also disability sports as he has been doing to the general sports.
Yeah.
Because I've seen there is a lot of potential. So I'm sure we expect a lot.
Emong says he looks forward to competing in the 2018 Commonwealth Games, saying his work is not done until he brings Uganda the gold. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
That's it for this Thursday, September 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Zubair El Tayeb, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good Thursday.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 1730 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.